Somehow, a quiet college town in Southern Oregon became home to a nationally renowned theater company. That was 80 years ago, and the Oregon Shakespeare Festival shows no signs of slowing down with age. 11 plays on three theaters begin in just a few weeks. The plays range from pillars of the Shakespeare canon to musicals featuring songs by the Go-Go's. Here's our chance to learn about this year's plays and the process leading up to their bursting forth on stage. We have two guests from OSF. Lydia Garcia is a literary associate. Welcome, Lydia.
Thank you very much.
Good to have you here. And Julie Felice Dubiner is the associate director of the American Revolution's United States History Cycle. Julie, welcome to you.
Thank you.
So tell us a bit, if you would, each in detail about the work you do there. Julie, let's start with you.
Sure. Mostly what I do, I work on the American Revolution's program, which is a pretty large commissioning program. I think we're still the largest in the country. I'm hoping we maintain that as our status. We're commissioning 37 plays about moments of change in American history, and we'll be doing that commissioning over 10 years. And that's a ridiculously large number of plays in a ridiculously short period of time. We are in year 7, I think, now. Mm-hmm. And I've been here for about 4 years. So mostly what I do is I work with the director of the program, Allison Carey, figuring out who we're going to commission next and working on the plays that are coming in and promoting them and working on making them even more awesome than they already are.
So 37 plays, and how far along toward that number are you now?
I believe right now the number is fluctuating a little bit. I think we have 22 writers under commission right now. 6 of those plays have been produced. One more, Sweat, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a little bit, will be produced at OSF this year. And then we have a number of drafts coming in. And then over the next couple of years, we'll commission the last 15 or so.
And American Revolutions is the cycle that that gave birth to All the Way, which
exactly,
won the Tony
yeah.
last year.
Okay. Woohoo, yes.
Yes, I'll ask about the Tony Award and how long that's been passed around.
We didn't bring it with us.
Oh, yeah, we should have told
We should have brought it with, us.
It with us.
Oh, that would have been good. Well, next visit for sure. Lydia Garcia, let's talk yes. about what you do at the Shakespeare Festival as a literary associate.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Louis Douthat, whom I think your listeners will know well, likes to say that our jobs are, you know, other duties as required. So what don't we do in the literary office? I am one of the production dramaturgs that is in residence on staff at OSF, which means that I have the great pleasure and privilege of working on anywhere from 2 to 4, sometimes 5 plays a year, being involved in the production process in the rehearsal room, which is great, and we can talk about. In addition to that, I'm also involved in season selection along with Julie. So part of an advisory body that works with Bill every year to pick that incredible slate of 11 plays, which is quite an enormous process, but very satisfying.
How far in advance does that whole process take place? I'm curious to know when you begin looking. I mean, by now you pretty much have the season locked up for
2016. Mm-hmm. And the beginnings of 2017 already. So I think on average we're about 2 years in advance because, you know, preparations, which include, you know, building sets, building costumes, certainly working with the creative teams, takes at least 18 months on average. So it takes quite a long time. When in those months that OSF is dark, when the theaters are not actually in performance, it's actually some of our busiest time. I think our audiences don't always realize that.
That was one of the questions. After the lights go out in November and you get most of November, December, and January off, though, it is not at all like a vacation.
No.
Not for most of us, no. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a large amount of administration work that goes on, and then mm-hmm. for us, in dramaturg land, mm-hmm. we're prepping for our next shows. The shops are up and running like crazy. Generally, they started building 2015 before the 2014 season was over, mm-hmm. and so there's just a significant amount of magic happening when no one's looking.
Has it always been that far in advance, or has it just sort of extended out as the theater has gotten more professional, more polished?
I think back when it was just, you know, 80 years ago and some boxing and some shows, probably wasn't quite as early.
Right.
I think in the last couple of years, and we haven't been here to predate the third theater, the Thomas Theater that was added about 11 or 12 years ago. But I'm sure with that, the production load has increased. Going up to 11 shows in rep is mm-hmm. a significant amount of work.
Exactly. I think There was an email from the ladies in archives just a couple of days ago talking about a reunion of actors in the ensemble, like from those original acting companies when Angus Bowmer was still the artistic director. And they were describing having a costume budget of something like $40. and they were having to, I mean, dumpster dive for lack of a better description of, like they would turn upholstery from couches that were discarded into costumes. It was, very much a Scarlett O'Hara era of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Or the Carol Burnett, yeah.
Well, there is that as well, depending on the production, I think. But certainly, as the years have passed, as our productions have grown in complexity and also as our audiences have grown to expect, incredible theatrical experiences, our theater has grown to accommodate them.
I remember when I came for my interview about five years ago or so now, and I saw a whole bunch of shows. I was here for 5 days, and I saw eight of the shows or something like mm-hmm. that. And I just remember being so impressed, and I continue to be so impressed with, just it's Broadway-level quality mm-hmm. on our stages. And I had no idea coming to Ashland from a more traditional regional theater that I was just going to walk in and just see such gorgeousness on the stage from every angle, from mm-hmm. the costumes to the sets to the sound to the actors to the direction to everything. It was just mm-hmm. beautiful.
I can Absolutely. Imagine some of those first impressions, though. You probably fly into the Medford airport and you drive off down the countryside.
Much less impressive than the theater, yes.
Well, it's the new airport is nice, but yes. You drive down Interstate
That's
5 off into the country, but you're probably thinking, well, where is this place? My God.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes. No. I mean, I started with OSF in 2008 as part of their young professional development program, and I came from Connecticut, so I was coming straight from school, and to get from New Haven, Connecticut to Medford, Oregon requires every mode of transportation short of a rickshaw and a dog sled.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I'd never been to OSF until I came that summer before my residency started, and I was expecting a Renaissance fair, so I was looking forward to my fried turkey legs. And I know I have yet to get those turkey legs.
She's
but
really disappointed about the turkey
I
leg
really
thing.
I really am.
We'll get back to talking about the first impressions
legs.
Of the turkey legs, Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and the coming season. Lydia Garcia and Julie Felice Dubin are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll talk more about the preparations for the season and the contents therein. And you can join us as well. Come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. We're talking about the coming opening of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival season, the 80th anniversary season. It was in 1935. Angus Bowmer first put the Oregon Shakespeare Festival on stage on its feet, and it's been around ever since in ever-increasing audiences and polish over the years. You can join us as we talk about the season coming up with Lydia Garcia and Julie Felice Dubiner from the Literary Department at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Our phone number here, 800-838-3760. That's around the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org, or go to our Facebook page and get a look at the cute picture we shot of Lydia and Julie when they first arrived.
Our alibi photo, we were really here.
Yes, you really were, with the Jefferson Exchange on the wall behind you and everything. I want to come back to the some of the nuts and bolts of what you guys do, because dramaturgy is always an interesting thing to talk about. And in addition to pronouncing dramaturg, you always get into some fun zones there. And Julie, I understand you actually co-wrote a book on this.
I did. The Process of Dramaturgy, with a gentleman named Scott Ireland and a lovely woman named Anne Fletcher. Mm-hmm. Dramaturgy. my father used to always make this joke of, when's my drama turkey coming home for Thanksgiving? Which ties us back to the turkey legs.
Yes, exactly. Way to
and
bring
that's
it
basically
back.
What dramaturgs do, is we tie it all together. I used to joke that, or not joke, but when I was teaching, the three C's were really handy when talking about dramaturgy: content, context, and concept.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, both of us are dramaturgs, and I think most of the people I know at the theater think dramaturgically, even if they wouldn't call themselves dramaturgs.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're talking about is, in context, we do the background research for historically based shows. We talk about why it is we're doing a show that was written in 1598, but we're setting it in 1914 and we're producing it in 2015 or whatever the which is also leads into concept of why are we doing it in 1914? What's that about? Mm-hmm. What does 1914 tell us about 1598 and 2015? And then what was the other one?
Content, context, and concept.
Oh, context is a history.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we also sort of do that for the theater as well. Lydia was talking mm-hmm. about the season planning process, mm-hmm. and both of us have worked in the capacity of sort of institutional dramaturgy of looking at how these 11 plays work together at the shows that are being talked about for 2016, 2017, how does that all work together? Louis and Lydia did a beautiful bit of dramaturgy working mm-hmm. with Bill Rausch has a plan to do all the Shakespeare plays in over 10 years.
Right.
And Louis and Lydia just did an absolutely magnificent dramaturgical trick of figuring out or helping him figure out which order he wanted to do them in.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea of looking at things holistically mm-hmm. is sort of our bag. On a basic level, we're people who are reading scripts and evaluating them and looking for writers or looking for plays or looking for stories all the time. We are story people. Mm-hmm. We are narrative people. We are structure people, and we want to figure out how to tell stories.
Is your role committed differently, though, depending on who the director is? I've often wondered about that with dramaturgy.
Absolutely. I think, for example, just to give you an idea, this year we're doing Much Ado About Nothing, and this is actually my second time doing Much Ado at OSF. And the two processes could not be more different, although it's the same text that we're starting with. But again, as Julie is saying, a director's approach, the concept which a director approaches a play makes it a very different beast. And so the process might be the same of starting with a two-dimensional object, which is a play on the page. But then once we start incorporating all the storytelling elements that goes into creating a theatrical experience, which is so different from film, it's so different from novels, it becomes in many ways a familiar story, but a fresh one, because you're hearing it in a different way. You're seeing it in a different way.
I don't know if you mm-hmm. feel the same way. I know for me, one of the things that attracted me to dramaturgy or theater in general mm-hmm. was that it was never going to be the same every day.
Oh, absolutely.
And that you can, even if you're working with the same group of people that you've worked with before, if you're lucky enough to find your posse,
mm-hmm.
every show is still going to be different, even if you have the same people in the room, even if you come back to a play that you've done two or three times.
Absolutely, absolutely. And sometimes from
alchemy.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes from performance to performance, like once we actually get out of the rehearsal process, once we are in performances with a live audience in the room, having the experience with us, the audience also makes it a different experience every time the actors, the production crew, the stagehand enter the theater and start again.
And the audience.
And absolutely. So it all depends on who you're sitting next to, really.
Right.
We grab your headphones. We have a call for you. We're talking to Lydia Garcia and Julie Felice Dubiner from the Oregon Shakespeare Festival about the coming season. And here is Tony in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. I was wondering, when are they going to put a play on about how women had to fight for the rights of women?
Any particular period in history you want to concentrate on?
Well, basically the original ones that went to bat to win women's rights for freedom.
Okay, thanks for that,
by
Tony.
By giving them the right to vote.
The right to vote. Okay, so we're talking the early 1900s for sure.
Sure.
Tony, thanks for that.
I'm so glad you asked that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's one of the I have a constant cry that I walk around with at the theater of remember the ladies.
yes.
And it's one of the things that we have been talking about a lot at the theater, figuring out, especially in the canon of our namesake playwright, of looking at women and looking at how we tell their stories.
Mm-hmm.
In American Revolutions, there are some plays coming up that I can't really talk about that definitely deal with women's rights. There are some writers who are interested in the topic that Tony was just mentioning of mm-hmm. of looking at the suffrage movement, looking at the temperance movement. I'm still hoping for my Abigail Adams play, but we'll see.
But
and then we also we've definitely are I think also one of the things that we do, because we have the 11 plays, is we're constantly thinking metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a contemporary play, or if we have a historical play, and then we have a Shakespeare play, of how are they talking to each other?
So back to the American Revolution cycle, for which you, Julie, are the associate director. You know, when I think about the fact that 37 plays, as you point out, it is a ridiculous number of plays to try to do in 10 years. But
well, we're just commissioning them 10 years. We're not producing them in 10 years.
Okay.
We're not
so,
that crazy.
But there is such rich material to work with. I mean, you could easily do twice that many, three times as many.
Absolutely. And it's one of the great things that we're in right now in this moment in American theater is that I think there's more support for American playwrights now than there ever has been, which isn't to say that there's enough. We can always support playwrights more and better and more playwrights more and better.
Mm-hmm.
But we are in a moment of flourishing, I think, for new American plays. And so for us looking at this program, it's exciting. I know for me, when I first heard about the program, a couple years before I applied for my job, which I'm still so grateful to have gotten, but it's like that the absolute ambition of it, the scope of it, was so incredibly thrilling. Most theaters are commissioning one play at a time,
mm-hmm.
or a play for a subject at a time, and so to see something so grand was really just so exciting.
You can join us as well on the Jefferson Exchange, as Tony and Grants Pass did, as we talk about the coming season at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival with Lydia Garcia and Julie Felice Dubiner. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. 800-838-3760, jx@jeffnet.org, or check out their picture on Facebook. Let's talk about the plays of this season then, because, just to go down the list quickly, Much Ado mm-hmm. About Nothing, Guys and Dolls, Fingersmith, Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land, and Sweat, all in the Angus Bomer Theater. The Thomas Theater will feature Pericles, Long Day's Journey into Night, The Happiest Song Plays Last. And the Allen Elizabethan Theater, the Outdoor Theater, opening in June, will feature Antony and Cleopatra, Head Over Heels, and The Count of Monte Cristo. So a lot of variety there. As we pointed out, you have stuff ranging from, you know, classical Shakespeare canon stuff all the way to songs by the Go-Go's. So were you, how much, Lydia, do you get involved in the picking of plays? You mentioned that there's a fair amount of involvement from the literary
absolutely,
department.
Absolutely. I think, literary, which is comprised of, you know, Louis Douthat as the director of literary development and dramaturgy, and our, fearless assistant, Kate Fairchild. And I work closely together with Julie and with Allison Carey as part of American Revolutions. To work with Bill Rausch, our artistic director, every year we work together to figure out what are the kinds of stories that we are most interested in telling, what is happening in our nation today that we feel pressed to address, because we are as much shaped by what is happening in our own current national moment as Shakespeare was writing about his society. We begin the process of choosing a season usually in the fall. So once we've opened the current season, that's when we do a deep dive into reading plays, evaluating them with the incredible assistance of a committee of about 45 to 60 people that is comprised of the heads and staff members of every single department at OSF, from administration to production to artistic, and every level of hierarchy. So there's no greater joy than to see, an executive director working alongside an usher to talk about a play and to lead the discussion. It's a beautiful thing.
Does it necessarily begin with Shakespeare? Do you kind of figure out which of the Shakespeare plays that might be the tent poles for the season and then drape from there?
We've taken different approaches in different years. There have been times when we feel compelled, because of what is happening in the country, a play will jump out at us and say, the play tells us you have to produce me now. It's incredible how that happens. So sometimes we do enter the process with, having a rough idea of which Shakespeare plays we are most interested in producing. But then sometimes a play by Shakespeare will come at us out of left field and all of a sudden become the most natural thing in the world. Why didn't we think of that sooner? Mm-hmm. Every year is a little different. Also, depending what's coming out of American Revolutions, what is coming with, other directors who are coming with us with, incredible ideas for stories. So we never quite know what we'll get.
So as we go down the list of things that are coming up this year, Much Ado About Nothing, you mentioned, actually has been done twice in your 6 years here, is it right?
Just once. The last time was 2009 in the Outdoor Theater.
All right, but this is the second time.
This is my second time.
All right. So, but kind of a short rotation, it's a very highly, highly popular Shakespeare play, I would think.
Absolutely. I mean, 37 plays by Shakespeare sounds like a lot until you start realizing that when we do, 3 to 5 Shakespeare plays a year, those titles actually tick away quite quickly. And there was a time when I think we did the Shakespeare comedies much, much sooner than we would do, for example, a Hamlet or an Othello. Something about the tragedies and the romances, we tend to give a little more breathing space. But a Twelfth Night, a Comedy of Errors, a Midsummer Night's Dream, a Much Ado About Nothing, especially the plays that are, most beloved by our audiences, there is an impulse to go back to those stories more often. But actually, between 2009 and 2015, that's a respectable gap for us.
But if anybody thinks that they're going to see like the 2009 version of Much Ado About Nothing redone in 2015, they're in for a
no.
They'd be sorely mistaken.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, the last one was done in the Outdoor Theater, and architecture shapes a play in ways that we're not even aware of. So if you saw the Much Ado outdoors, this will feel like a very different experience because you're in a different space, entering the world in a different way.
Okay, right behind Much Ado About Nothing, which previews on February 20th, I see Fingersmith comes up to the, it's a world premiere coming to the Angus Bowmer Theater on February 21st, in a preview anyway. Tell us a bit about that play.
Sure. That's also one of the ones that I'm dramaturging in addition to Much Ado. So Fingersmith is an adaptation of Sarah Waters' 2002 novel, which I believe was a finalist for the Man
Booker
the,
Prize.
The Man, exactly. And Alexa Young, who is the adapter, has had a love affair with this novel for the better part of the last 10 years. For listeners who may not know the novel, it's an incredible Victorian crime thriller. So the Victorian era in England, being, of course, like the 1860s, which, we think we know, but Sarah Waters gives us this moment of history in really unexpected, very contemporary ways. I don't want to give anything away because, honestly, you have to have the experience. But the story centers on two young women, one of whom grew up in the rough part of London and who finds herself involved in a plot where a con man is determined to cheat a young heiress out of her fortune. And so our heroine, Sue Trinder, finds herself in the English countryside in this Gothic mansion with lots of very strange things going on, and she ends up going on the most incredible adventure. Unexpected. There is love. There is betrayal. There is, everything that we find exciting in a story, really. Should be a lot of fun to see.
I am so excited about that one.
Me too.
Yeah.
This sounds similar to one of the musicals on Broadway right now. What is that one about murder?
Oh, which one isn't about murder? A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder.
Yes.
Yes, with Bryce Pinkham, who I went to school with.
Really?
Done workshops of American Revolution plays. Yeah.
See, American theater, it's a very small world.
I was about to say, you guys all seem to know each other all around the world.
We do. Oh, the gossip. Oh, the gossip.
Lydia Garcia and Julie Felice Dubner from the Oregon Shakespeare Festival are our guests on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the coming season. So let's talk about Guys and Dolls, also one of the ones coming up very, very soon here. In the Angus Bowmer Theater, so it's the big musical of the year.
It is. This is another one. I mean, there's so many that I can't wait to see. But Mary Zimmerman, who was here with Whitesnake a few years ago, is directing this production of Guys and Dolls. And it's Guys and Dolls. and it's what's really fun for me as someone I started my career in Chicago when Mary was first being herself, being the awesome Mary Zimmerman that she is. So to see her taking on a classic American musical like this is just really, really thrilling. And the word coming to me from the rehearsal hall, I ran into the stage manager in the supermarket a couple weeks ago, and I've run into a couple of the actors on the bricks, and everyone is just so excited to just get into tech and start doing the thing for real and get an audience in.
Mm-hmm. In the process of doing something like Guys and Dolls, though, which has been done by just about every high school in the country, probably in the last 10 years, I mean, how do you keep the material fresh? How do you commit to doing all the things that need to be done to make it a great Guys and Dolls? Do you try to put wrinkles in it? Do you just stick with what you got? I mean,
from what I understand, Mary is doing it sans wrinkles. it's a technical term that Lydia and I learned in grad school.
Exactly.
I think, you know, there's so many different ways to do it. You know, there's great stories of like postmodern productions of Annie and things like that. You know, it's like, I think this one is from what I understand, I have not seen a rehearsal myself, but from what I understand, Mary is taking a very straightforward approach to material that, again, we think we know. Mm-hmm. I think most of us do either know a high school version of it, or we know the Frank Sinatra film, and the play, the book musical is actually a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, one of the things I love about doing classics, even though I'm, you know, in the new playland more here, one of the things I love about whether it be Shakespeare, whether it be Guys and Dolls, whether it be any of those things, is when you find people who have great love for it, mm-hmm. that passion will come through. So even if it is, you know, Much Ado Outside, Much Ado Inside, Guys and Dolls with wrinkles, sans wrinkles, it's that, you know, that passion for the material, that joy in being able to tell the story again,
mm-hmm.
always comes through. So it is always new. And I think with Guys and Dolls too, we have a sort of an assumption that people know it. I was really surprised when it came up in Boar's Head last year. That's the season selection process.
Mm-hmm.
How many people actually didn't know it anymore?
I've never seen it. I've never even seen the film.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So it's actually newer to, like, it sort of fell out of favor, I think, for a minute. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, that assumption that we make that everybody knows it.
Mm-hmm.
I also get really thrilled when you do see, especially with the musicals here, that they do attract such a young audience, and seeing kids get introduced to the great American musical through a production like Guys and Dolls,
mm-hmm.
is going to be totally fun.
Absolutely. I think it's that rigor that I love about the way that OSF approaches these well-known plays and musicals.
Well, you bring up an interesting side point that we'll get to when we come back from this break, which is the outreach and the education and how many school groups do come every year, because I'm sure there are quite a few of those. We'll come back and talk more about the coming season at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival with Julie Felice Dubiner and Lydia Garcia. Back on The Exchange with the two of them and with you in a minute 15. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about the coming season at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. OSF begins previews of its plays for the season on February 20th with Much Ado About Nothing in the Angus Bohmer Theater, the first of 11 plays on three stages. It's a pretty typical season for the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. The 80th anniversary season, though, because the festival started with Angus Bohmer in 1935. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we visit with Lydia Garcia and Julie Felice Dubiner from the Literary Department at the Shakespeare Festival, and talk about the plays for the coming season. 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area. 800-838-3760. Excuse me. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org, or check us out on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So we were just talking about the plays for the season. Didn't get all the mm-hmm. way up to Pericles, one of the first one coming out of the shoot, the first mm-hmm. one to open in the Thomas Theater, which is interesting to hear you talk about it being open for 11 years now, because I remember when it was still called the New Theater for a long time.
Well, and every once in a while, you know, especially like if I'm not thinking about it, I still call it the New Theater. So it may be the New Theater for a long time. Yeah, exactly.
So how is Pericles being done? I mean, again, you know, the issue with Shakespeare is you've got, you know, 500-year-old material here that you're trying to keep fresh and new.
Mm-hmm, exactly. Well, our Pericles this year is being directed by Joe Hodge, who our audiences will remember from his direction of Henry V in the Outdoor Theater. When was that, 2012?
Yes.
The years all blur together, together at this point.
So
Joe is, you know, directing Pericles in the indoor stage, but he's really been excited by the musicality of the text, and in particular by his collaboration with, oh, help me.
I can't help you.
Exactly. Well, I'm not calling this a musical Pericles, but there's going to be an incredible amount of music. A lot of it played by, I believe, the ensemble live on stage. There's at least one musician, Pericles being played by Wayne Carr, who has loved this role for a long, long time. He's quite excited to play it. But it's a wonderful adventure story. You know, as we were talking with Fingersmith, Pericles goes on the most incredible journey of discovery and love and loss and reunion, which is so much about what we love about Shakespeare in these romance plays, and the reconstitution of the family at the end.
Mm-hmm. And then the next thing up at the Thomas Theater, I notice on March 25th in preview, Long Day's Journey Into Night by Eugene O'Neill, so one of the greats of the American theater canon.
Mm-hmm. That's another one that I'm dramaturging. It's funny. Long Day's, I think much like Guys and Dolls in a way, is a play that we think we know, and yet I think OSF has only produced it once. The last time was in 1975. So I think for many of our long-standing audiences, it'll be their first experience here at OSF with this play. But it's such a landmark in the development of the American theater in the 20th century, this incredibly bittersweet autobiographical story of Eugene O'Neill, the playwright, writing about his family. And about just the push me pull me dynamics of so many families, where love and cruelty coexist in surprising ways.
How much does a dramaturg get involved in decisions like how to stage a play? Because you have choices, particularly with the Thomas Theater, about whether you're going to do it as three mm-hmm. quarters or in the round, or mm-hmm. A number of different ways to configure a play.
Right. I think it probably depends on the project, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I think for depending on who you're working with and mm-hmm. how the director leads the process. So depending on how the director likes to work, I've been involved in processes where we all sit around the dramaturg, the designer, the director, and we all try to figure out together mm-hmm. how to do it. And then others, come in with a very strong idea already of how they want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, I would always hope that, the whether or not the dramaturg is in the room when those concepts are developed, that at least they are rooted in the text and what the play wants to be and what the play, how it wants to develop. So I have been involved in processes where, I have had conversations that are, down to the nitty gritty of how the physical space is used, and others in which a conversation about themes or about a recurring word, for example, manifests in the most unexpected ways.
Yeah. I mean, our job is to ask questions.
Yes.
And so we're kind of like annoying toddlers in a certain way. Of,
why?
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 Yeah.
Exactly.
Well,
I'm
struck by the variety, though, because over the course of a season, for example, you're going to end up, going from, say, Music Man to Water by the Spoonful, mm-hmm. from Party People to the Coconuts. So it's like, what does a dramaturg do for something slapstick like the Coconuts?
Julie?
Well, I can tell you. I was the lucky girl who got to be the dramaturg for the Coconuts last year. That one was actually incredibly fun because Mark Bedard, who played Groucho, adapted. We got permission from like 12 different estates for Mark to adapt to make a new version of the Coconuts. And David Ivers, who's another old friend of the festival, even though he's really my age, so he's not that old, he came in to direct it. And he and Mark were awesome together. Mm-hmm. And so my job, often when you're a dramaturg on a comedy, you worry that your job is to be the one to say, that's too funny, that's not. You got to tell the story. Luckily, with these, I did not have to be a killjoy once. I actually could walk in and just be like, actually, you know what? If he walked over there and said this instead of that, then that would be even funnier. And then Dave would be like, that's a terrible idea, but let's do this instead. And mostly it's, I think for all the shows, whether they be like high tragedy or high comedy or mm-hmm. low comedy or low tragedy, I don't know what that would be. Mm-hmm. But I'm now pondering that.
Historical pastoral.
Right.
Exactly.
Our job is to support. And, so it's like, I remember going to see the Coconuts in a run through last year in the room, and I just laughed my butt off. And I was not forcing it at all. It was just like seeing it in the room front to back at the same, all mm-hmm. through, was just so delightful. And that in itself was my dramaturgical contribution to the show, was to be their first laugher.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Be the one to laugh.
Yes.
Also coming up this season at the Angus Bomer Theater, Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land. Interesting because this is written by Stan Lai, directed by Stan Lai.
Yes.
How infrequent is it that you get the playwright directing his or her own work at the Shakespeare Festival?
Shakespeare's never been here to direct.
No, he never has. Okay. He keeps turning us down. Something about not being available. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I mean,
he's doing operas now.
Well, it's true. I mean, Mary Zimmerman is it one recent example of a director originator. You know, with her White Snake. You know, a part of her incredible process of creating new material. I mean, I feel like
so it does happen.
It does happen.
And so, what's
it
the story of Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land?
you want to take that?
Sure. So this is a play that is the most successful, the most popular play of China and Taiwan. Written in the mid 80s, 1986. It's one of these unexpected plays that is very sly in the story that it's telling. So on the face of it, you have two plays that are being performed simultaneously on the stage. The conceit is that two different acting companies have rented the same theater for their performances. One doing a contemporary tragedy about a couple that was separated by the fission between China and Taiwan in the late 40s as a result of the communist wars. And so the couple is torn apart, and then they find themselves reunited 40 years later. That's one story called Secret Love. The other is a farce performed probably closer to a Peking-style opera comedy. So broad, physical, incredibly funny, very bawdy in many ways, about a fairy tale world called Peach Blossom Land, which, you know, for us, we might think of this as Shangri-La. We might think of it as Brigadoon, a perfect Eden that you kind of stumble upon. And if you leave it, you can't go back. And so these two acting companies get into an all-out war fighting for the theater, and they're both trying to perform their play simultaneously, and then you start finding that the stories become interwoven in unexpected ways, and you find that they're actually telling the same story in a way of, you know, like longing for something that you lost long ago and can't go back to.
Wow, sounds mm-hmm. really interesting. And that opens, first preview is middle of April.
Yes, and this is a world premiere production of Stan's English translation of his own play.
So the last show that actually goes up at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival this year is the American Revolution's play, Sweat, by Lynn Nottage. Tell us a bit about that one.
That play, Lynn Nottage is a MacArthur, Pulitzer, she's won everything, mm-hmm. except a Tony, because somehow women don't get to write plays for Broadway, but we'll talk about that some other time. Mm-hmm. Lynn has been produced at OSF before with Ruined a few years ago, and Intimate Apparel, mm-hmm. who's also here.
Mm-hmm. Crumbs from the Table of Joy?
Crumbs from the Table of Joy, yes. I think. Mm-hmm. She and Robert Schenken are the most produced contemporary playwrights.
Yes.
At OSF, that is. Sweat is, we commissioned Lynn to write a play, and she had been working with a community in Reading, Pennsylvania. Reading, Pennsylvania is one of those towns in the Rust Belt where NAFTA and what Lynn is calling the deindustrialization of America sort of hit incredibly hard. Mm-hmm. And for a while, they were the highest poverty rate in the country. Mm-hmm. And so Lynn, being Lynn and her magnificent self, she went down there and she interviewed several people from the community. And then she went off and she wrote a play. And the play looks at a group of friends who are dealing with the closing of the factories, with union lockouts, and what eventually a crime that rips the fabric of their families apart, just as the closing of the mills are ripping the town apart.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like heavy stuff, but American Revolution stuff often is.
And but Lynn has an incredible. She has a light touch, and mm-hmm. she will break your heart, but she won't make you want to die.
Right.
That's a good distinction to have.
It really is.
You mentioned women and Tonys. I forgot to ask you about the Tony Award that, of course, went to All the Way, which originated the Oregon Shakespeare Festival through the American Revolution cycle. Does the Tony Award actually reside here in Ashland, or is it in Robert Schenken's place?
There's a couple floating around.
Exactly.
Yeah, Robert has one. We have one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The producers probably all have. It's not like the Stanley Cup where they've just passed the one cup around.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But it seemed like that one got, I did see the Facebook page, I think, for the festival, and it seems like everybody in the festival got to touch that Tony Award.
Julie Cortez, who's probably listening right now, did just a magnificent job of Tony selfies.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, it was fun.
Exactly. It was really, really fun.
And ultimately, it was a literalization of you know, how many people it took to, as you say, you know, touch that play to make it a reality. You know, every single member of the OSF company, from the actors, you know, down to the incredible artisans in the costume and prop shops, scene shops, you know, everyone working in administration, that was a labor of love of
hundreds
of people.
Ushers,
absolutely. I mean, holy cow. And then to have a labor of love go 3,000 miles away and burst onto the American imagination has been very sweet.
I want to ask about a couple of plays before we run out of time
here
that are relatively new things, I guess, to the festival stage. In the Thomas Theater, starting July 7th, The Happiest Song Plays Last.
Mm-hmm. Happiest Song Plays Last is the third of the Elliott Trilogy plays. Our audiences who saw Water by the Spoonful last year saw play number two. So this is the sequel to Water by the Spoonful. And it follows a couple of the characters that we met in that play. You know, what happens when, you know, at the end of that play, Elliott, who is our central character, is about to leave his hometown of Philadelphia to embark upon an acting career in Hollywood, of all places, while he's still dealing with, you know, his post-traumatic stress syndrome experiences from Iraq. You know, he's a veteran. And then his cousin, who decides to abandon this upwardly mobile, you know, track of ambition for herself and go back to her hardscrabble neighborhood in Philadelphia to become a community mother, in a way, to, you know, look out for people in a community that really needs help. And so, you know, both of them find love in unexpected places. Elliott finds himself back in the Middle East, somehow having to relive his experiences as a Marine in Iraq, but now in front of a film camera, and having to deal with his own, you know, personal struggles with what he experienced, all while the Arab Spring is exploding onto the scene in the Middle East. So it's a gorgeous story. You know, Kiara Hudis, the playwright, has such a way with language and with music. So there's going to be a lot of music in this particular play.
Which brings us to the final one I want to ask about, which is Head Over Heels, which has music and lyrics by the Go-Go's on the outdoor stage, starting in previews June 3rd.
So excited.
You guys are bouncing
already. it's like the music of my misspent youth. That's
right.
Very exciting.
Exactly. Well, I mean, this is one of those projects that you know, makes me happy to be in the theater. You know, in the way that the theater artists can marry incredibly disparate elements. So, you know, so on the one hand, we have a play from the 16th century, you know, written by Sir Philip Sidney, that was the inspiration for Jeff Whitty, who our audiences will remember from The Further Adventures of Hedda Gabler a few years ago, you know, about a duke who's trying to avoid a prophecy that he doesn't really like so much. And so he and his family go off on adventures.
Right,
on a vacation, exactly.
All I ever
wanted. So you take a classical story, and then you marry it with, of all things, the portfolio of the Go-Go's from the 80s. So you'll probably recognize a lot of songs, but in different forms.
I know, and I'm so excited, too, just in terms of, like, the growth of the American musical, or sort of the evolution of the American musical, that we've been through this great jukebox moment, and some of those jukebox musicals are really awesome.
Absolutely.
But that Jeff is taking it in his own special direction.
Oh, so much fun.
It's much more fun. And also listening to the arrangements of the songs, it's really, you know, what is it, making the familiar strange, right?
Yes,
yeah, all
exactly.
Kinds of fun coming to the stages of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival this season. I want to thank Julie Felice Dubiner and Lydia Garcia for joining us today in the exchange to help us get a better understanding of the season. Thanks
Fabulous.
For being here.
Thanks for having us.